We now begin the 22nd chapter of Joshua. In this chapter, we have the whole chapter fully devoted to a discussion of the soldiers who came over from Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, located on the east side of the Jordan River, and helped to conquer the land of Canaan. Now that the war was ended, the war had ended in a glorious manner with God's people being victorious, Joshua, as a prudent general, disbands his army. Now remember, this is a people who really never designed to make war their trade. They weren't professional soldiers. They had a job to do. They came to do it. He now sends them home to enjoy what they'd conquered and to beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And we're now concerned particularly with the forces of these three tribes, or these two and a half tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, and the soldiers they sent over. So he says in the first verse, Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh, and said unto them, Ye have kept all that Moses the servant of the Lord commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. So he gives them a commendation here. They had made an agreement with Moses that if Moses would let them settle this land east of the Jordan with these two and a half tribes, that then as a result of that, they would go with the children of Israel into Canaan, and they would go as an army and help to conquer the land, which they did. And we have no reason to believe they didn't fully live up to their agreement here. They were in the lead as they made the advance into Canaan. They maintained a quota of troops that was ready to fight, some 40,000 in all, and we have no evidence that they failed to live up to their part of the agreement. So Joshua commends them by saying, You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. So although this was a command, they had agreed to do this, it was their duty, it was something that they were obligated to perform, yet after they performed it, they were commended for doing it. Joshua was pleased, and he gave them a good word here as a result of that. He says in verse 3, You have not left your brethren these many days unto this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. Now this is a little difficult to really determine exactly what he's saying, because we do not know how many days he's talking about. He says, You've not left your brethren these many days unto this day. Some of the people who have studied the chronology of the times feel that it was about 6 to 7 years in the conquering of this land. And so that is probably the length of time that Joshua is talking about. You've not left your brethren these many days unto this day. Now, I don't know that this means that there was no time when the army was at rest, when they were wintering, when they were having a brief recess from fighting, that none of these men could have slipped back across the Jordan River and visited their families, seen how things were going, or could have maybe even gone home and been relieved by others who came to take their place. That we don't know all that for sure. But I think what this is really saying is that they did not fail to maintain the ready and well-equipped and proper-sized army that they had promised to do in the conquering of the land of Canaan. But Joshua said that you have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. Now that is a wonderful thing to be said about anybody, to be able to say that they have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord their God. That's very wonderful. It's something to be much of a commendation. Although it is a command, although it is our duty, it's still a mark of achievement to have done that. In verse 4 he says, And now the Lord your God hath given rest unto your brethren as he promised them. So the promise was that they could have this land east of the Jordan River, a sizable area of land for these two and a half tribes, but they could not possess it with their families until after the rest of Canaan was conquered. Now their families stayed behind, their wives, their little ones, their cattle. They had their possessions, and they were already enjoying the land, but these soldiers, the men, had to go on into the warfare, and now they've been doing this for some 5, 6, 7 years. So he says, now the Lord your God hath given rest unto your brethren, as he promised them. So he tells them, now therefore return ye, and get you unto your tents, and unto the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of Jordan. So he tells them to go back. Go back to your land of your possession, the land that Moses gave you. It's yours. You can go now and enjoy it. You can go and enjoy it in peace, because this is according to the total plan, and you fulfilled your part, and now God, through Moses, and the command Moses gave, is going to fulfill his part. The land is yours. Now, you know, there is no doubt that these men did grow quite weary during this 6-7 year period of continual fighting, not having any place to call home, not being able to be with their families like they would want to, not seeing their little ones grow up like they would desire to have that happen. But nevertheless, there was a job to be done before they could go to their rest. And some have made an allusion to that situation with the fact that we today would like to go on and be with God, would like to quit this land and the battles that we're having to engage in here, and go to our land of rest, the land that's been promised us as a possession, the land that we can have as soon as we finish with our warfare here. But nevertheless, we have to stay until the warfare is over for us. We must let God be the one that decides when this has come about, when this has been accomplished. And consequently then, we can't just quit our fight here anytime. We can't just give up and say, well, I'm ready to go home. That's not our prerogative. Until the Lord is finished with us in this life, on this side of Jordan, then we won't be able to take our possession on the other side. And so that's an allusion to this situation that the three tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, had here as their men helped conquer the land of Canaan. And truly today we are in a position of trying to conquer territory for the church. We're in a spiritual warfare. It's a continual warfare. There are many enemies, yet we can have the victory, and we do have the victory, if we will fight the warfare as God instructs us to do. So he says in verse 5 now, but take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Now this is the charge that Joshua gives them. Yes, they'd fulfilled all the promises that they'd made to Moses. They'd fulfilled the commandment that Moses had given to them. But now as they go back in a time of peace, as they go back not as soldiers, but as citizens of their newly acquired territory, Joshua gives them a charge. Joshua doesn't tell them to go build a big nation, great nation. Doesn't tell them to get active in the political affairs and see how much prominence they can rise to or achieve. He doesn't even tell them to go and cultivate the land or to build good houses or anything of that nature. But he tells them what's their first duty and what's our first duty. He says, take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you. Now that's the first number one priority, to do the commandment and the law. That is what God has wanted in every age. Whatever his commandment was, whatever his law was, that's what God wants to be done. And so before we can be successful in our other endeavors of living in a community, providing for our families, and being able to conduct our affairs, we must put this thing first, to take diligent heed. Now, diligent heed means that you listen, you look, you watch, you pay attention, you give your time, you give your effort. Take diligent heed, he says, to do the commandment and the law. Now, these were necessary. It's not a matter of saying, well, we have a law and we kind of live up to the general spirit of this law. There's a few things we violate, but it doesn't make that much difference. No, he says to do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you. Then he goes on and he's specific now as to the attitude, the frame of mind, the way of life that they must have in order to be able to carry this out. He says to love the Lord your God, and to walk in all his ways, and to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him, and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. So God is to come first. A love for God, so that you'll do nothing to in any wise violate the goodness of God, to bring no harm to the things of God or to God himself. You work no ill to God or to the ways of God. You love the Lord your God. You walk in all his ways. Every action that you have is an action of walking according to his instruction, walking all his ways, to keep his commandments, and to cleave unto him. To cleave unto him is to be close to him, to be constantly thinking of him, what he wants, what he desires you to do. You're not getting away from him. You're not going into some other interest that would separate between you and God, but you're staying close to God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul. Now, all your heart indicates the mind, the thinking capacity that we have, and the soul, of course, would be the body, our physical overt actions. So the things that we think and the things that we do should all be things that are done in service to God. Now, the instruction Joshua was giving here is some very, very basic instruction. Right after Moses had given this law the second time in the 5th chapter of Deuteronomy, in the 6th chapter of Deuteronomy, he reviews this. He says this again. And it's so important that I'd like to review that again at this place. One of the most important facts that man can believe anywhere is this one fact, that there is only one God, the true and the living God. He will not share position with any other God. He will not allow his authority to be diluted or to be invaded by any other thing, whether we've imagined it, whether we've created it, or whether somebody has given it to us. It doesn't matter. And so he says in Deuteronomy 6, beginning with the 4th verse, he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God." Now this is the first truth that man must believe in order to be acceptable to God. This is the first truth. The Lord our God is one God. Verse 5, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thy heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates." So Moses is giving here the most basic principle of all. It is the first truth that man is to believe, and it's the first duty that man is to obey. The first truth is to know that the Lord our God is one God, and the first duty is to love the Lord thy God with all thine heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. In Matthew 22, we have our Savior expounding upon this very thing. Beginning with the 34th verse of Matthew 22, "But when the Pharisees had heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they were gathered together. Then one of them, which was a lawyer, asked him a question, tempting him, and saying, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." And in Mark 12:30, Jesus worded it this way, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment." So So we see Jesus here is reiterating the very same thing Moses said in Deuteronomy 6, and this charge that Joshua gives now to the soldiers of Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh. And we find that to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart has to do with the mind and also with the feeling part of man. To love the Lord thy God with all thy mind has to do with your understanding, your ability to know and to do what is right. To love him with all thy soul has to do with your life, with the very fact that you have an existence here. And to love him with all your strength concerns your energy and power. All these things, which is the total concept of man as a being, all these things then are to be devoted to God. So Joshua was giving them the very greatest blessing that could be given, the very greatest instruction that could be given. Don't go home and try to become richer and make a great name for yourself. Go home and first of all, you pay attention to God. Love God. Do all his commandments. Walk in all his ways. Cleave to him. Serve him with your heart, with all your heart, and with all your soul. Verse 6 says, so Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went under their tents. Now this seems to be a kind of a conclusion that of the blessing that Joshua gave. And it would be applying to these 2.5 tribes. But we find in verse 7 that there seems to be a lingering of this half tribe of Manasseh. And Joshua says some other things to them in addition to what he said to the whole group. Verse 7 says, now to the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given possession in Bashan. But unto the other half thereof, Joshua, among their brethren, on this side Jordan, westward. So this Manasseh, as we know, has been divided into two halves. One half over in Bashan on the east side of Jordan, the other half on the west side of Jordan, and its lot was divided out to them by Joshua. It was related to Joshua. Manasseh was the brother to Ephraim, and Joshua might have felt closer to this group because they were really closer kin to him. And also, this half-tribe of Manasseh might have lingered about leaving because they felt closer to the half-tribe of Manasseh that was already in Canaan, as they were closer related to them. I don't know what the reason is, but it seems that they lingered for a while and didn't leave as soon as the other two tribes did to go back over Jordan. So, he says, and when Joshua sent them away also unto their tents, he blessed them. Verse 8, and he spake unto them, saying, return with much riches unto your tents, and with very much cattle, with silver, with gold, and with brass, and with iron, and with very much raiment. Now, whether this is just for this half-tribe of Manasseh that he's saying these words, or whether it's really for all the 2.5 tribes, it's a little hard to distinguish here. And I do not believe that he's giving this half-tribe of Manasseh special goods and special benefits that the others didn't get, because they all seem to equally earned what they did acquire. But we do learn from this that these two tribes that came over and fought, these 2.5 tribes that came over and fought for the land of Canaan, although they didn't get any inheritance on the west side of the Jordan, they fought for the other tribes to gain their inheritance, yet they were allowed to partake of the spoils of the war. For he further says in this verse, divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. They were to take the spoil of war, and he names the things here. He says, return with much riches unto your tents, with very much cattle, with silver, with gold, with brass, with iron, and with very much raiment. So the things that they had gotten from war, they could take back with them. They could return back to their tents with it. And he says to divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. So those that were at home on the east side of Jordan would also get to partake of these spoils of war. They were to divide them up. And Joshua describes them as much riches. And said very much cattle and so forth. So they must have acquired quite a bit of benefit in the way of goods during these wars. So in verse 9, and the children of Reuben, and the children of Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh returned, and departed from the children of Israel out of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go into the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were possessed, according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. So we see then that the word of the Lord was carried out. The promises that were given through Moses by God had been duly given to these people. And the carrying out then of the duties of these people to God in order to gain the promise had also been done. So this is the conclusion that we like to read about and to hear about with all of God's servants. God's given a promise based upon a condition, and the people carried out the condition satisfactorily in the eyes of God, so then they then are recipients of the promise and have been pleasing to God. And that's what the case was here. So the army was disbanded. These two and a half tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, were dismissed, and they returned to the land of their possession. It seems they returned in a body, or all together, and more than likely they used something like ferry boats to get all themselves and goods back over the Jordan River. And what an occasion this must have been as these families welcomed the soldiers back home after their long absence. I hear the war is over, the victory's been assured, they come home with all these spoils of war, and now they can get back to the business of settling down and farming the land and building the houses and really being members of their families again. While our time has expired at this time, we'll close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.